The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello and welcome to Tuesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. And despite it being midweek, there is no letting up as the 2021-22 season approaches the final straight. Premier League action and Champions League games on the horizon this week. And as always, here at FSD, we have got you covered. Give the subscribe button a quick click up the top there and you can get access to our daily episodes to make sure that you are right up to date as the season just barrels on in the coming weeks. On today's show, we're previewing tonight's Champions League action as defending European and current world, sounds like a boxing match, defending European and current world champions Chelsea take on Ligue 1 side Lille. Romelu Lukaku finds himself right in the middle of it for the Blues after he broke a pretty unfortunate record. He probably doesn't want reminding of it, but we are going to remind him of it in the show as he got himself the headlines. We also take a look at the fallout from Leeds' defeat to Manchester United at the weekend. I'm not talking about Scott McTominay's ankle, I'm talking about Marcelo Bielsa and what his next move at Leeds is. And despite the summer appearing to be a long way off, based on Storm Eunice, Storm Terry, whatever you want to call your storms, the transfer rumour mill is already in action as Manchester City and Everton plot their next moves. Right, plenty to get through on this morning's show. My name's Fergal, and joining me on Tuesday duty, we have Marley Anderson. Marley, on this fine Tuesday, how are we doing?
Yeah, good morning. I'm still here. The storms in England haven't blown me away quite yet. I'm still hanging on, being nailed down. So happy enough to still be here.
Football Social Daily's answer to Craig David, Marley. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, any day of the week, he's here. Craig David. And alongside Marley, we have Joel Tudor. Joel, how's things this morning?
Yep, all good. I think the only thing that's... I thought the thing that would blow Marley away was his new Newcastle-looking side, but clearly not. Hard to impress.
No, that's the advantage. Once the money has started to settle, you start acting like a rich person. It's like when you get paid for that first few days or that week, you start acting like a rich person. And then
I've already got the Versace gown and brogues on order, yeah.
Charged. As long as you're keeping it real with Greggs, that's the focus.
100%, yeah, it doesn't matter how much... How rich you get, you can't take Greggs out your staple balanced diet.
No, not at all. Kieran Trippier lives by the same thing as well. Right, we're going to get started on tonight's game. Joel, let's go to you first on this. Chelsea against Lille. As I said in the intro there, in the build-up, Chelsea are defending European champions, current world champions, and despite so much focus being on the restarting of the title race at the weekend with Manchester City and Liverpool, Manchester United and Arsenal and West Ham and Tottenham battling for what's probably going to be the last Champions League qualification spot, Chelsea have been quietly getting on with their job and they're actually in a position to win 5 trophies this season. They've already got the world title in the bank. They've got the EFL Cup final coming up this weekend and the main treble, FA Cup, Premier League, Champions League. They're still in a position that if all goes well, they could end up winning the absolute lot. And we mentioned this on Sunday's show. They're probably benefiting from the fact that despite the fact they've just won a major trophy, not really many people are talking about them because all eyes are on Liverpool and City and how that plays out, United, Arsenal, etc. Does this play into Thomas Tuchel's hands that all that focus is not being shone on him? Because Chelsea haven't been amazing in 2022. They've been nice and consistent, as I say, getting the job done. And they're probably going to end the season with 2, maybe even 3 trophies.
Yeah, in some aspects. I mean, if you look just at the Premier League, I think they have been massively disappointing, considering the fact that at the start of the season, they were probably one of the favourites, if not the favourite, to go and win the title, especially with the amount of huge deals that they did. And the team, in terms of the depth, is probably one of the best in the league by far. And I think one of the main reasons is just the fact that they've not got a striker scoring the goals as most of the other sides challenging do have. To be honest, obviously, I think they went into that really bad run of form after that draw against Manchester United. I think it was in November. But since then, they've only lost 2 games in 3 months, which is very consistent, to say the least. So they have been quietly churning away, and obviously They've got the Club World Cup, which is always nice with that little shiny badge on your kit. But then you've got the Champions League, which, you know, they finished second in the groups to Juventus, which again was pretty disappointing because I think many thought that that group was there for the taking, but it seems to have done them really well, where they've got Lille, who are no longer the side that they were when they actually qualified for it last season. So realistically, obviously, they've got the Carabao Cup at the end of the month. That could be the first trophy. The FA Cup's still something that's very realistic. The Champions League, I think that'll be too much for them this year. But, I mean, if they get one trophy this season, I think it's an average season for Chelsea because, like I say, I feel like they had the team that could go and really challenge for the title this season. But I just don't think that Tuchel anticipated just how misfiring his strikers were because, you know, let's not forget he has £150 million worth of strikers and both of them are misfiring completely. And I think when, especially at Chelsea, it seems to be a thing there where the big money strikers just never seem to do it, apart from probably Diego Costa, you would say. Everyone else seems to have this kind of, I don't know what it is, this cursed role, this cursed number nine shirt, yeah, apart from Kalibula Ruz, probably. So,
what about Steve Sidwell?
Oh, he had number nine at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did, God. Yeah.
Well, this is what I mean. They just dash it about like it's any other number.
Their list of strikers, yeah.
It's
shocking, isn't it?
Like, it is, it is. I think if you get into that, if you go into Lukaku's situation, but it's a strange season for Chelsea, but I think just because of the fact that they're in so many competitions still, there's not a massive onus on Tuchel because there's still the ability to make it a successful season. But I still think they've been massively disappointing in the Premier League, despite the fact that, you know, they've only conceded the second least and they've scored the third highest, so it's not been awful, but I think personally they should have done way better.
Just looking ahead to tonight's game, a little bit of team news, Marley, in terms of how we're expecting Chelsea to line up. Reece James and Ben Chilwell are both still out, long-term injuries. Callum Hudson-Odoi will miss out too. Cesar Azpilicueta, Thomas Tuchel said yesterday that he's 50-50 because of a groin problem, and Mason Mount is almost certain to miss out. So there's some important absences for Chelsea, but the focus that we're going to look at is the players that are going to play or are at least expected to play. And the group stage form was impacted by injuries to Timo Werner and Romelu Lukaku. They missed two important games and Chelsea dropped points as a result. They still got through the group and they came to a second and, let's say, not a lucky draw, but let's say a favourable draw in getting Lille, who kind of battled through as group winners in their own right. So Romelu Lukaku, we know it hasn't really worked out for him to the extent that Chelsea fans would have wanted or would have anticipated when he came back to the club this summer. And this record that I mentioned in the intro is how I'm going to build this into you. Lukaku only touched the ball 7 times in Saturday's 1-0 Premier League win over Crystal Palace. That's the lowest number any player has managed in a 90-minute Premier League appearance since Opta started measuring in 2003. Now, people in favour of Lukaku say the numbers kind of don't tell the full story. That's a big, stark number, a real negative hanging around his neck. Thomas Tuchel's come out and defended him and said, it's not the time for joking or focusing on these things to do with Lukaku. But you get the sense now that this is where Chelsea need him to fire. They're probably okay for getting top four, but in the Champions League and in the FA Cup as they approach the later rounds, he got 2 goals in the Club World Cup to get them the title or help get them the title. They need him now and they probably need him tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one thing that Lukaku has always had hanging over him is his record in big games against the best teams, because he had a shocking record when he was at Man United. It used to go around every time Man United played Liverpool or Manchester City or Chelsea. It would pop up like no goals in like 30 odd games or something against members of the big six, as you would call them. So that was always hanging over him, and now you look at it and he started off well and then he started giving interviews to Italy and it all went downhill from there. But I mean, if you pay £100 million for a striker, you expect him to score against every team in the league. You'd expect him to score against a world 11 if one existed, but at the minute, I mean, Crystal Palace made him look like, you know, just completely like a Sunday league player against them, because he just barely touched the ball. He wasn't a threat. 7 touches, but I think, I mean, I watched the clip of the seven touches that he took against Crystal Palace.
Were these seven good ones, at least?
Do you know what? Actually, four or five of them were good hold-up play, but the one in the compilation, they even showed you two touches that he took for Ziyech's disallowed goal, and it was Lukaku's offside, so technically those touches don't count. So two of those seven touches, if I've got this right, didn't count. So it was even worse than what it may appear. So, you know, there's a huge problem there. He doesn't look happy. He doesn't look focused. He doesn't look anything like the player that he was when he was at Inter last year. And I don't know whether the football is just that much easier in Inter, or the weather's that much better that he likes it more, or the language is nicer and everybody's a bit nicer to him, or whatever it is. But you don't pay 97 or 100 million quid for a guy who might score against you know, the more inferior teams in the league. So you need him to step up, because he's at an age and a stage of his career where he's got everything he needs to succeed. And he, despite scoring over 100 Premier League goals, he will go down, in my opinion, as an absolute flop in this whole Premier League era. Because as soon as he left West Brom and he kind of made it, as you know, when he went to Everton, then Man United, and then Inter, and then Chelsea. For me, he's not done enough for a guy of his talent, of his stature, everything he's got about him. You know, he's just nowhere near as good a player as he could have been, and it's really sort of just crapping on his reputation, in my opinion.
Looking at the situation, Joel, with Lukaku and with Werner, based on the start to the season, we know that Werner also had difficulties last season in terms of settling at Chelsea and showing his best form. Ironically, we've probably seen the best of both of them in the Champions League, even though they've missed games through injury. Lukaku's got 5 goals in 12 starts in the Premier League, but he's got 4 goals in 6 starts in the Champions League. And then Werner, 1 Premier League goal and 3 Champions League goals. Now, sometimes the numbers, as I say, can not really tell the full story, but you look right the way through the rest of the team. Chelsea have got the second best defensive record in the Premier League. They only conceded 4 goals in 6 Champions League games, so they were fairly solid in Europe as well. Midfield with Conte, Kovacic, Jorginho, they've got a really good unit. There is the sense now, knockout stages of the Champions League, business end of the Premier League, this is where they need them. For me, the big question between now and the end of the season for Chelsea is not top 4. I think they've got it wrapped up. I think they might even get a domestic trophy. The big question is, can Lukaku and Werner score the goals to take them on another level? If you're a Chelsea fan looking at this, are you confident that they can?
Well, I mean, going forward, I agree with Marley. I just don't think that Lukaku even wants to be there. No, it was clear in his Italian interview that when he was at Inter Milan, he was literally like a god there, like Adriano level, just because he brought the Scudetto back after a decade. And if someone does that in Milan, you're going to be forever like held up as a hero there. And I think he thought that the grass was greener. But when you think of Lukaku when he was in the Premier League, banging them in, of course he's always scored, like for United he scored a decent amount, but he was his most prolific at West Brom and Everton, because they were sides who played against the run of play majority of the time, and he was always able to get in behind because he's fast as hell. And then when you go to Inter Milan, he either had a little bit of a strike partnership with Lautaro Martinez, which gave him a little bit of support, or he had a manager, Antonio Conte, who completely bases his team around a target man. He always has that figure up front who they supply consistently. Whereas with Thomas Tuchel, and as he said in his interview, the team isn't playing to. He's basically saying I have to adapt to the team now, which isn't how he's probably best to be played. So I think the writing's on the wall with this one, because Thomas Tuchel's not going to change his side for him. And I just don't see the situation improving either, just because in the Premier League as well, I just think that when he's at Chelsea, I think if you're a striker, you have to have good technical ability on the ball to actually survive there. Like we've seen with, for example, Didier Drogba, he could have probably played on the wing. He had that much good technical ability. Or he could have played, or Diego Costa, he had really good technical ability. Whereas when you look at the ones who failed, like Andrei Shevchenko is a bit of an anomaly, but like Fernando Torres, and there's many more who's not come
Kesman,
about.
Crespo.
Yeah, there's. I don't know what it is there, but I think he needs to be in a certain type of setup, and I think in Serie A where it's generally a little bit slower, the defenders aren't as tight on you as probably the Premier League, and he had a manager who basically wanted Lukaku to be the figurehead of the team. I think he was always going to have the benefits of it. But I think in the Premier League, when you're with a team, a top team who's always pinning the opposition back, I just don't. I watched it at United when he was playing for us. When we were dominating a game, he would be absent. You wouldn't see him because he couldn't get involved in the game because he didn't have great technical ability. He's a guy who just is an unbelievable finisher. But if you can't supply him, or if you can't get involved in the game, he's just absent, as we saw against Crystal Palace. So, I mean, if Chelsea want to compete for the title, having a top striker is an absolute key element, isn't it, really? And if you've got two strikers who you paid $150 million for and they're both completely absent, apart from in Europe, it's pretty telling, isn't it? Because in Europe, the football is generally a little bit slower. So they have a big problem with that. And I wouldn't be surprised if on one or the other, they probably cut the losses in the summer and find someone who's a little bit more technical in terms of being able to just be a big physical presence but can actually play as well.
Right, before we take a break, Marley, call this for us. Lille won't be a pushover. I know we've kind of built them up as the easier end of the draw that Chelsea could have got in terms of group winners. 11 points from 6 games meant they finished top of Group G, conceded 4 goals in those 6 games, identical to Chelsea. Only Real Madrid and Bayern Munich conceded less than them, but you would have the expectation that Chelsea will have enough to get through this. Bigger challenges lie ahead. How does this go down at Stamford Bridge tonight?
I don't think it'll be a great game. I think it'll be a Chelsea win, but not a real convincing one. I think if you look at sort of Chelsea and say, yeah, they're not in their best form, you've only got to take one look at Lille and see where they are in the French league, and I think they're down in 11th at the minute, so things aren't very good there. They've sort of used the Champions League as a bit of a distraction this year, and a sort of a welcome distraction. But I think they've lost too many players to really trouble Chelsea. I think last season's Lille, with the manager and the sort of star players, I think could have given Chelsea a bit more of a problem. But this time round, I think Chelsea will pretty comfortably control the game, but not look. Because of the lack of strikers, I don't think they'll put a few past Lille, but I think it'll probably be like 2-0 or something, and fairly straightforward in terms of the way the game goes. But could you imagine playing Chelsea at a better time? Like if you were Lille, I'm not sure you could. So could be a decent game, but don't expect it to be any shocks, really.
Joel, would you agree? Maybe not pretty, maybe not the best game in the world, but you expect Chelsea to get the job done?
Yeah, you would think so. Lille last season are not the team they were this season. Obviously, they won the league last year and now they're in mid-table. But if there's anyone who can hopefully bail them out, it's Jonathan David, who I've been massively impressed with. I think he's probably going to end up getting a massive move in the summer. But yeah, it should be straightforward for Chelsea this one. But then in the next round, it'll be very telling because the opposition starts cranking up a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to make it 3-3, a Chelsea win, but bigger challenges to come down the road, which sounds strange when we're talking about the defending European and world champions, but I just think the rest of the field is probably a bit stronger for them. But tonight, Chelsea should have enough. Right, we're going to take a quick break here on the Football Social Daily. After the break, we are talking Leeds. Marcelo Bielsa's side lost the War of the Roses at the weekend. Scott McTominay's ankle took a battering, but so did Leeds. They find themselves still down in the relegation battle, and I'm going to be asking the guys what next for Marcelo Bielsa and Leeds as they look to stay in the Premier League this season. We'll be back in just a second.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily Premier League podcast. Just a quick reminder, as always, here on Football Social Daily, we are here every single day of the Premier League season. If you hit subscribe, you can get access to a brand new episode, keeping you right up to date as the season powers on in the next few weeks and months. But up next, we're going to be talking about Leeds. Difficult situation for Leeds. Marley, let's go to you first on this one, because we talked before the break about Chelsea and how there's focus on other teams in their part of the table, and you find yourself in a similar situation with Leeds. There's so much focus on Burnley and Watford and who's inevitably going to go down. Can your team, Newcastle, get sucked back into it? Will Everton go down and break their long record of never being relegated from the Premier League? There's maybe not a massive amount of attention on Leeds, despite the fact that they are slipping and slipping and slipping. They've won just two Premier League games in 2022. The defeat that we mentioned before the break to Manchester United keeps them right in there. And as it stands, it doesn't look good. 24 games played, 23 points on the board. That keeps them 5 points above. Burnley obviously have two games in hand. Everton have a game in hand on them. They could leapfrog them if they win that. Things are not looking great for Leeds. And despite the fact that there's probably attention on other teams rather than Bielsa and his players, they are right in the mix and they could go back to the Championship.
Yeah, it's not over for Leeds in terms of, like, they're not out of this. They're very much in this fight, because, you know, there is focus on other teams because they're probably, you know, Everton and Newcastle are probably bigger teams in terms of the ones that attract the attention, because Everton shouldn't be down there, obviously, and Newcastle have got all the money, so they're going to attract a fair few headlines. But yeah, I would be worried if I was Leeds, if I'm honest. They haven't won in four games now. They don't really look like scoring anywhere near enough to drag themselves out of it. You look at how they're sort of playing, and you know that Bamford hasn't, I think he's played about six games this season or something and missed the rest. Rafinha is obviously amazing, but can't do everything himself. And the defence is really poor. I think the signings they've took, like Llorente and Robin Koch, they're not amazing. And for me, Pascal Strauch's one of the worst players I can think of in the Premier League. I think for a guy who starts every week, he's just full of mistakes. He just baffles me when he's on the ball. He looks like he's going to lose it. He made a mistake at the weekend for Man United, one of Man United's goals. And yeah, Leeds haven't. I think it's just a depth thing, if I'm honest. Like, even when they've got everyone fit, they're still not that deep a squad. They've still got, like, a few sort of standout players, and then everyone else just isn't quite good enough. Like, Stuart Dallas was amazing last season, but, you know, is Stuart Dallas the type of person who's sort of a 7 or 8 out of 10 player every week? Like, no, not this season. He just hasn't been. You look at the goals, they're not scoring enough. Meslier's stick, like, doing his best, but when you're facing 15 shots a game, 2 or 3 are going to go past you. It's as simple as that. But they need to book it up, because everyone's kind of got used to how they play. It's almost a typical case of that second season syndrome, which is a cliche I don't really like to use, but probably the cliche that pops up and sort of reappears every other season, like it did with Sheffield United last year when they went down with a whimper. It could happen to Leeds, because, you know, they're bang in trouble, and they've got to improve quickly, because they're running out of time, really. 24 games, only won five. It's not it's not exactly not relegation form, is it?
The goal issue, and in terms of conceding goals, Joel, that's the big issue for Leeds so far this season. They've conceded bang on an average of 2 goals for every Premier League game they've played. They've let in 50 goals. Only Norwich have conceded more. That is pretty dreadful. And you look at the teams that are in and around them in the table, in the relegation conversation, generally they've conceded up to 10 less. Everton have only conceded 40, Watford 43, Burnley 29. I know Burnley are probably a bit of a special case because they never concede many goals. And they have had issues with injuries. Bamford, Phillips are so important. Phillips has only played 12 Premier League games. Bamford's only played 6. And obviously he was central to everything positive about Leeds last season. You get the sense that they just want to get over the line. They want to make sure that they're a Premier League team next season. And in the summer, there will be changes. So I want to talk about what one of those changes could be. And that's Marcelo Bielsa. He's absolutely loved and adored by the Leeds United fans. He can do no wrong. Sitting on a bucket, sitting on the floor. He could sit. Some of them would let him sit in their living room. They love him that much. But you do have to have the difficult conversation of what next for Bielsa. He's out of contract this summer. He generally never signs more than a 1, maybe a 2-year extension. And he kind of admitted that he had his arm twisted a little bit to sign this extension because he was confident that they could stay in the Premier League and look to build. And he wanted to leave them in a stronger position than when he started, obviously, in the Premier League. So looking at the odds in terms of where he is, he's currently fifth to be sacked. Fifth down. He's not going to be sacked. Leeds are not going to sack Marcelo Bielsa. But there is a difficult decision to make in the summer for him, for Leeds fans of, if he probably doesn't want to sign the extension, don't twist his arm a second time. But there's the concern that if he does leave, so much of what Leeds are about is tied into Marcelo Bielsa. Another manager can't just come in and immediately pick it up because he's a very unique manager. He's got a very unique way of doing things. And it's a difficult balancing act for Leeds to get right, because if they get it wrong, we're going to be having the same conversation this time next year and they're probably going to go down.
Yeah, I think with Bielsa, his hands have been a little bit tied this season. I think last season he was able to, well, to be fair, they did concede quite a lot last season as well, but the only difference was that they had players who could actually kind of outscore their opponents in some cases.
Bamford.
And obviously, yeah, Bamford, exactly. He's the massive main missing point and he's barely featured this season. Another one I would say is Calvin Phillips, who I think they've missed massively in the midfield. He's barely played. Then you've got Liam Cooper. Obviously, they lost Ben White, I think it was a couple of seasons ago. I think he was a big miss. So he's not had the biggest fortune this year, and it happens a lot with clubs who have a great season, because pretty much they've had an injury-free year, everything's clicked for them, and then suddenly the next season, players leave, injuries happen, and he has to kind of feel the makeshift side. Obviously, you get players who come out of the shadows a little bit, like Rafinha, who's probably been their star light this season in terms of actually getting the goals. But apart from that, I mean, they paid, what, $30 million for Rodrigo, and he's been nowhere near what everyone thought he was going to do. And but I think with Bamford, he's... Well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? When you don't have your main striker playing for you, and especially when you a lower, like a mid-table side, you're going to suffer massively. So I wouldn't be surprised if Bielsa does move on, because as we've seen in his previous clubs, he's not a guy who is keen on staying around consistently. If he feels like he's done all he can at a club, he will move on. I think there was talk of Jesse Marsh, who's potentially being lined up to replace him, who I don't think is a massive upgrade on him. But yeah, I think this season it's just all about just maintaining the Premier League status, because as we've said, the two main players who were probably their players of the season last year in Calvin Phillips and Patrick Bamford, they've not been around at all this year. And if you take the two best players out of any side in the league, every single side will suffer no matter what. So yeah, it's a season of just survival for them and just maintaining their spot. They can't do much else to kind of better last season, but they just don't want to have the same scenario as Sheffield did, where they went straight back down and then you don't know how long it's going to take. It could take another 19 years again, so you never know about that. So I think the goal is just staying in the Premier League.
I think looking at the situation with managers and in terms of who might leave, I'm just looking at some of the odds here, and the strangest thing that nobody is talking about is Mr. No Manager to Leave is currently top of the rankings. He's doing worse than anybody, and I think that's a bit unfair on Mr. No Manager to leave. I think he's getting a real bad press on that. Right, looking at Leeds and their situation, Marley, we try to avoid cliches, but sometimes they do just work. Home form is going to be central for them, for Newcastle, for Everton, to try and pull away from the bottom three. And just looking at their home games, they've got 14 games between now and the end of the season, 7 at home and 7 away. So at Elland Road, they've got Tottenham, Aston Villa, Norwich, Southampton, Chelsea, Man City and Brighton. Now, looking at that, and based on the idea that they don't pick up a lot of points on the road, we know that. Is that enough in the bank to keep them in the Premier League?
Well, it has to be, doesn't it? Simple as that. I don't think they can pick and choose which games they go for at this point. You've got to make Elland Road an absolutely horrible place to go, and they have done that in the past. You know, the crowd at Leeds is probably one of the best in the league. It's probably in the top five. It's for a sort of fan base that hasn't had, you know, Premier League football for nearly 20 years, and then they've had it last year and then this year where they can actually get in grounds properly. You're looking at that and thinking like that should be the big sort of thing that Leeds have that other teams struggle to match. And obviously the lack of players and the injuries have sort of superseded that a little bit and made it not quite able to be the same. But I think with Leeds, they'd have to go just all out for everything. Like if you have to try and score four goals and because you can't concede three, then play like that. I think Bielsa is clever enough. He's been around the block, you know, more times than any manager in the league probably. So he knows what he's doing. He knows the challenges he's facing. And you've just got to hope for his sake that he comes out the other side of this, because I don't think Bielsa will want another season after this, whether they go up or whether they stay up or go down, to be honest. Because I think if they stay up, he'll say, look, I've took this club as far as I can. I've got them into the Premier League, first time in 19 years. I kept them there, and then I kept them there this season as well. And I think if he goes down, I think he is the type of guy who says, look, I've failed. Whether you think I've failed or not, I've failed. And I think he'll say someone else deserves a chance, because that's the type of character he is. He doesn't believe his own hype type of thing. He doesn't sign contracts for the sake of it and for the payday. He doesn't need it. He doesn't want it. So I think with that coming up, you know, these 7 home games left will be what makes or breaks Leeds. But either way, I can see them going in a different direction at the end of the season.
Joel, have they got enough left to squeak it, to squeeze it? Is there three worst teams? You know, we're throwing all the cliches in here. Will Leeds have enough to stay in the Premier League, whether or not Bielsa is in charge come the start of next season?
Yeah, so with Leeds, I think when you look at the league table, obviously they're only 5 points away from safety at the moment, but I think the team that they're all going to be watching out for is Burnley, just because they're the ones who have the two games in hand on both Leeds and on Newcastle. So, you know, if they end up picking up form, which they seem to be at the moment, then I will be worried. But I mean, one win for Leeds and it takes them up to 13th. So it's a very knife edge kind of point of the season, isn't it, where one loss and you're suddenly doomed, one win and you're suddenly looking at the mid-table again. So I think they should be okay. I think they're a little bit better equipped than, say, you know, the teams below them, probably bar, you know, Watford and Norwich and Newcastle, but I think they should have enough to stay up.
Yeah, I agree, and I've been saying it for weeks, I'm going to bore you too with it, said it at the weekend, been saying it for ages, Burnley will decide the relegation battle, and I think, and I'm kind of making it my hill to die on in the last couple of weeks, I think they'll get out of it. Brentford are my tip, because they are dropping and dropping like a stone. But I think Leeds will be okay. But I think in terms of Marcelo Bielsa, we could be seeing the end of him in the Premier League, or certainly the end of him at Elland Road. Right, we're going to take another quick break. After the break, it is transfers, Raheem Sterling's future at Manchester City, and according to reports, Everton are going to be splashing the cash this summer. Frank Lampard is going to be given a big stack of money, but who is he spending it on? We're going to be talking about all of that in just a second.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman, we'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily. We are talking transfers in the final part of the show today. Raheem Sterling, Joel, is the first one in terms of gossip pages. He's right at the top at the moment. Obviously, no transfer window at the moment. We've got to wait until the summer, until contracts are negotiated, and there's the potential for some big moves in the Premier League market. According to reports from The Times this morning, Manchester City, Pep Guardiola, want Raheem Sterling to stay. Now, we know at the start of the season there was talk of him leaving. Guardiola didn't open the door for him, but he said, the door's open. It's up to you if you want to go. His current contract is until 2023. According to this report, they want to give him an extension until 2026 with the option until 2027. It would bring his wages up to make him the second highest player at City, in behind Kevin De Bruyne. So what I wanted to ask is, based on his record over the last couple of seasons, he has stepped up. He has stepped up in terms of his goals, and he's stepped up to be one of City's main players. Particularly this season, he scored some really, really important goals. Is this the right move for all concerned? Is this the right move for Guardiola and City to say, you're our guy, you're 27, this is the big contract that you're going to sign now to straddle the big part of the end of your career. We're backing you. We believe that you're the guy for us to score the goals and turn in these big performances for Manchester City. Is this the right call for all concerned?
To be honest, I've never really seen him away from Manchester City, to be honest. I couldn't really name a club where I feel like he'd suit. Just because at City, I just think he slots into that team really well in terms of how they play and how, you know, they're quite quick in their play, and that's what his game's about, really. It's always the case at City, though, because of how talented that front line is. As soon as one of the players doesn't play a lot or he goes out of form, suddenly everyone feels as though, you know, they're surplus to their needs and they end up getting linked up with a move away. But, you know, with Sterling, you can't deny his goal-scoring ability. I mean, he's got over 100 Premier League goals, which is an amazing achievement, especially for someone who's not a striker. So I think in terms of his position at City, I think Guardiola really values him in terms of what he can do. He can play on the left, play on the right. He could potentially play as a false nine if need be. And he's still relatively young as well. So I think it's the perfect move for all parties, to be honest. And trying to replace him, I think, would be a really difficult ask because he's pretty much guaranteed a good 10 Premier League goals a season. And from a winger, I think that's a really good return. So I think it's a good move all around. I never saw the Barcelona or the Real Madrid move happen, and I just don't think it would have worked out for him, to be honest. I think as I've said before, you have to be a certain kind of player with a certain kind of ego to survive at both of these clubs. I think you already need to have a little bit of that Galactico ego and attitude. Yeah, as we've seen with many players in the past who've not survived, they, you know, like Michael Owen, Jonathan Woodgate, the guys who did survive with, for example, David Beckham, Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale, because they're guys who either can show it in their ability regardless of the environment, or they have that kind of mentality and that attitude. So I just don't think he would have survived out there, and I think it's the best move for him to stay.
How does this affect the rest of City's business this summer, Marley? Because we know last summer the big links with Harry Kane, the deal didn't come to fruition. Based on his performance this weekend, Pep might go back for him, he might not. Erling Haaland gets thrown into the mix when his release clause at Dortmund drops this summer. Kylian Mbappe is floating around looking for a new job. I'm not saying that Raheem Sterling replaces those players, but if you give a big contract, a big 4-5 year contract to Raheem Sterling, does that affect not only your ability, but also your interest in going for other players this summer?
Probably, yeah, because, well, it goes without saying, doesn't it? If you lost him, you would have to replace him. So, well, even though there's probably one team in the world that doesn't need to replace a player as good as Sterling, and it probably is Man City, but I think if they did lose him, they would just go out and sign someone, whoever that may be. I don't know whether they've got someone in mind, but I think I'm the same as Joe. Like, I can't see him leaving, if I'm honest. I think he's happy there. There was talk of him going to Barcelona a month ago, but you know, they've moved, found some money from somewhere, down a few sofas and signed Aubameyang, Adama Traore and Ferran Torres and, you know, all the rest of them as well. So they're, that link's gone. And yeah, just like Joel, I can't see him anywhere else, to be honest. I can't see him at another club in the Premier League. I can't see him at Real Madrid, if I'm honest.
But if he stays, do they sign someone else?
No, I don't think so. I think they've pretty much got what they need. I think if they sign anybody, it might be Erling Haaland if those rumours are true, and you know, God help everyone else if they get Erling Haaland. But they don't need anyone, do they, really? Like, they've got wingers at the minute, you know. Foden played quite a lot on the wing recently. Mahrez, Grealish and Sterling as well. And then you've got players like Cole Palmer, and Gabriel Jesus has played on the wing for a little bit this season as well. So there's plenty of options there. So I don't see why they would... It's not like a gaping hole they need to fill. They're still walking the league with who they've got. So even if you took Sterling out, I don't think they'd sign anyone, or they don't need to sign anyone. So if they kept him, I think it wouldn't be the case either.
Looking at one of the other big transfer news stories this morning, Joel, from the Daily Mirror, and it's concerning Everton and Chelsea. Chelsea loan trio Billy Gilmour, Conor Gallagher and Armando Broca are reportedly being targeted by Frank Lampard, provided Everton stay in the Premier League. All three of them are on loan this season: Gilmour at Norwich, Conor Gallagher at Palace and Broca at Southampton. Gallagher's probably been the pick of the three, although I have been quite impressed with Broca at Southampton. I think he's eased what was a sticky situation after Danny Ings left and went to Aston Villa. The first question I want to ask you before we look at Everton is, if they go back to Chelsea this summer, and we know that Chelsea are famous for loaning out 50,000 players and only one of them comes back and gets into the first team, can any of them make it at Chelsea? If Gallagher goes back, is there a role in midfield? Can Broca be a foil if Lukaku continues to miss fire? Is there a place for any of them? Or is the sad truth that they probably get a Premier League career, but not at Stamford Bridge?
Well, I think if you look at the striker situation, I think Armando Broja is probably the most logical one to give a try, just because I think I've been massively impressed with him. I think he looks amazing up front. He reminds me a little bit the way he kind of bursts through defenders, like a little bit of Luis Suarez about him, not in terms of how good he is, of course, but I mean in terms of his play style a little bit. I think he's looking good so far. Obviously, he has to continue to be consistent. I don't think Conor Gallagher would be able to make a break in that midfield because it's just full of world-class players. So it's difficult at Chelsea, and I think sometimes these players need to just make a permanent move to the club that they're at. Like, I think Conor Gallagher would probably have I think it'd be smart for him to make a permanent transfer to Palace or to, you know, someone else like Leicester or that kind of club. So yeah, potentially, but I think the one who has the most chance is probably Broca, just because, I mean, the striker situation is worth a punt, isn't it, considering none of them can really get going up front. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, and I think there's going to be a lot of interest for him in the summer.
Marley, then I'm going to ask you the question about Everton. Again, all on the assumption that Everton do stay in the Premier League. Norwich, with the best will in the world, are probably not. So that means that it's unlikely that they're going to go for a permanent deal for Gilmour. So if all three of them come on the market this summer, there is a difficult question to be had, because Lampard is trying to build Everton in a certain direction. But if you're Conor Gallagher at Crystal Palace, he's been really good for them this season, 7 Premier League goals, talk of an England call-up for the next international window. He has impressed. Patrick Vieira's looked to change things at Crystal Palace. He's a really important player for them. Southampton, we know, are a good, solid Premier League team. Why would they go to Everton? Because Everton, every season, we sit down and we say, where is Everton going to finish? Can they crack the top four? Can they get Europa? And inevitably, they fall short. And most of the time, they finish below these teams or in and around them in the Premier League table. Is it a little bit disingenuous to say Conor Gallagher would definitely go to Everton rather than Palace, or Broca would definitely go to Everton instead of staying at Southampton, when in reality, both of them have got a good thing going, and if those moves became permanent, that might actually be a better option than what's become a bit of a poison chalice at Everton?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, there's a point there. You know, there is going to be interest in those players when they go back to Chelsea. There'll be a lot of clubs who've took note of what Armando Broha, whatever it is. I'm just going to call him Armando for now. You know, there's going to be people watching him score goals in a decent but not amazing Southampton team, and saying, you know, we can provide him more chances. He's 6'2". He's quick. He can finish. You know, why can't we tempt him by our project, whoever that may be, whether it's Everton, whether it's, you know, the sort of mid table teams, Crystal Palace, even Newcastle, for example, would they be interested? And the same goes for Conor Gallagher. I can't see Gallagher getting in to the Chelsea team anytime soon ahead of Kante, Kovacic, Jorginho, Havertz, Mount, Pulisic or Ziyech. You know, they're all there in ahead of him. They've cost way more. So there's kind of an obligation to try and make them fit. So I can see them leaving. If you look at Everton, Conor Gallagher to Everton seems like a really good fit for me. I think goals from midfield is something Everton need. You know, they've signed Dele Alli, but it's a bit of a chance. Van de Beek probably won't stay permanently. So if you were looking for a bit of energy and a bit of bite to that midfield, then Gallagher would fit that role. But at the same time, if I was Crystal Palace, I'd be doing everything I can to keep him, because you've proved that he's like you're a good fit for each other type of thing. He's scored plenty of goals for Palace this season. He's probably been arguably the best player this whole year. He's probably learning everything he needs to off Patrick Vieira on the training field every training session. So there's plenty of positives there. So I think people need to learn from Tino Livramento and look at Chelsea and go, am I going to get into that team realistically? Because Tino Livramento came out of Chelsea as their sort of youth team player of the year, left for 12 million, and he's been one of the best right backs in the league this season for Southampton. So I think a lot of players must start looking at what Chelsea can possibly give them over the next 2 or 3 years and say, what's better for my development? 38 games a season for a mid or lower half team, or 5 games and a few Carabao Cup appearances for a top team, because there's only one winner in my eyes, and that's for your development. You have to go and play games, and that's what that's what players are starting to do now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this kind of weird proxy war that we're going to have in the summer of mid-table Premier League sides and elite former Premier League midfielders. Vieira, Lampard, Gerrard going toe-to-toe for the Conor Gallaghers of this world. All we need is Roy Keane to take over Leeds when Marcelo Bielsa moves on, and then we're going to have a real showdown for these players. Right, guys, we're going to call it there for today's edition of the Football Social Daily. As always, Joel, Marley, thanks so much for your time.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Great stuff indeed. Don't forget, as always, to check out the podcast every single day between here and the end of the season. We are with you every step of the way, twists and turns all the way between now and the end of the campaign. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.